and welcome to another episode of Popcorn Optional, the weekly movie podcast where we review movies. And yeah, that's about it this week. We're not going to be doing really anything else. We're kind of just going to be talking about the new Marvel Cinematic Universe film, Spider-Man Homecoming. My name is Cameron Salina, and tonight I am joined by Jake Brown. Hello, buddy.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm bummed Trevor isn't with us, but I guess that's karma because he didn't have to see Transformers. So
yes. So flipping it in reverse, he misses out on a great movie. At least in my opinion, a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trevor is on vacation with his family this week. In Utah, I believe.
I believe that's right.
If you go find him on Instagram or Twitter at Turbo Trevor, though, I'm sure that he will update us with his information whenever he can. But yeah, so it's just me and Jake tonight. We're going to be doing a review of Spider-Man Homecoming, the newest Marvel film. We'll also talk kind of small opinions on the Spider-Man films before this. And we'll just give you our general thoughts in the spoilers. Just really break down this movie. We'll conclude at the end with giving this movie our ratings on how we feel about it. Where does it rank in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as far as their now 16 films that they've released? And then we'll hit you with our content of the week that you should check out. So, yeah. Alrighty, well, let's get into it. So, talking about the history of Spider-Man movies. Jake, let's just go through film by film. So, Spider-Man 1. This came out, I think, in like 2003, if I'm not mistaken. So we were 13, 12, 13.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
How does Spider-Man? Well, let's just talk actually all the Sam Raimi films. So Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3. Where do those films sit for you? How do you feel about those films?
Well, I mean, Spider-Man, the original, I mean, it really is like one of the original superhero movies. And in that sense, it's a great film. There are some bits of it that definitely feel a little bit dated. I am not a big fan of Tobey Maguire just in general, but I think out of all of the casting options that were available at that time period, as weird as the early 2000s were, he was definitely one of the better choices for Peter Parker / Spider-Man. And 1 and 2 are great. 3, we just don't even talk about. Like, that doesn't that doesn't exist. 3 is non-existent. But 1's really solid. 2 is great. I mean, it stands alone as one of the better superhero movies. Like I said, they're a little dated and they're a little campy, but that makes them kind of fun. And Tobey Maguire's terrible in general, but he's fine here.
Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan of Tobey Maguire either. I think he's a great Peter Parker and not a good Spider-Man, which we'll get into a little bit more in just a second as well when we talk Andrew Garfield, who I feel is flipped from that. But yeah, these movies, I was like, of the comics I read as a kid, and I didn't read a whole lot when I was younger, but I always read Spider-Man comics and I always watched the animated show. So same. Spider-Man was a huge part of my childhood, you could say, in a way. As far as superheroes go. And I think part of that, Jake, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think for our generation, Spider-Man was always a big deal because every other superhero was some grown-up adult. And Spider-Man, at least to me, felt like the one kid our age, at least, or younger superhero that was more relatable.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that more with this film, but 100% agree on just the character in general. Like, he's a high schooler. He's a kid just trying to do the right thing and just trying to pass his grades. He's not a billionaire or an alien, you know?
No, but like, that's what always has set him apart.
Yeah, like our generation grew up on Spider-Man, the animated TV show, and Batman, the animated TV show. Yeah. So like Spider-Man is right up my alley.
Yeah, definitely. And so Spider-Man 1, I'm a big fan of. I'm really not a fan of Willem Dafoe. I know that's probably an unpopular opinion to have. Something about the guy just creeps me out to the point where like I can't take him seriously on screen. I don't know what it is.
He's really Willem Dafoe-y.
Yeah. You know?
He's just like really Willem Dafoe-y.
That guy's really Willem Dafoe-y. That's the new... Are you Dafoe-ing this?
That's he our is, new thing. He's his own, like, genre of actors, though. Like, he...
Yeah, I can't think of anybody else that does
so
creepy
typecast
like
cast for yeah. what he is.
He is going to be in the new Aquaman movie. I think he's, like, Aquaman's uncle or something in that.
Well, that so makes sense because he looks like a goblin fish person. So,
yeah, and him and Jason Momoa look so much alike. Spider-Man 1 is fun. I like James Franco a lot as an actor, and so I think he does a good job in that movie. Is playing kind of that opposite of Spider-Man, and I think that they handle a lot of things well in that movie as far as source material goes. But Jake, I think you're right. These movies are pretty dated nowadays. When you watch the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, they're still a whole lot of fun, but they're very campy. They're very...
Early 2000s superhero.
Yeah, and they're comic booky, not in the good way. Like, when I'm like, yeah. Scott Pilgrim is a comic book movie, I mean that in the best way possible. When I say these are yeah. comic booky, I don't know if it's like the bright... I don't have a problem with the bright colors, but it's like, I don't know. It feels super saturated and super...
Well, what's weird is, like, the original X-Men that came out has the same feel, but that's, like, dark and, like,
yeah,
like not saturated. But it just has that, like, weird early 2000s feel to it, which everything yeah. in that era had, like, clothing, music. That was such a weird time in the world.
I also think that the Sam Raimi films don't do Spider-Man right. I feel like Spider-Man is played as Peter Parker in a Spider-Man suit.
Agreed.
I think for people who are big fans of Spider-Man, on a non-cinematic level, know what I'm talking about. And by that, what I talk about is Spider-Man and Peter Parker are very much two different people. And I think this series handles those differences very poorly. So I get that there's so many other things going on in these series or in that series that it's hard to focus on all of that. Spider-Man 1 is a lot of fun. I like that movie a lot. Spider-Man 2 is good, but for some reason I didn't click with it as much as other people did. Like, there was never part of me that was like, man, that's one of the best superhero films I've ever seen.
I think it was the action in that movie was so above and beyond anything that had really come out before in the superhero yeah. world that people were just like, holy crap, this looks amazing. And Dr. Octopus is an interesting character, and the actor did a good job with it. I always forget his name, but with these films, there's always like
Alfred Molina.
That's right. He's
from
he's amazing.
The Indiana Jones series.
Yeah. He's incredible. But I think, like, I keep going back to early 2000s. Like, we just have to look in the context of when these came out, because now they feel really dated. But when these things came out, I mean, they were so far and above anything else
yeah.
that was coming
oh,
out.
Oh, yeah. And especially for superhero films, like, if we look at that time.
Ugh.
I mean, so you had Superman Returns.
Rough time.
You had X-Men 3, X-Men The Last Stand. And that's kind of, I mean, you'd had, I think Punisher had come out around that time, too. So you kind of had a darker, grittier. There wasn't this cinematic universe. Oh, well, I guess you did. When did that come out? Spider-Man 2 came out in 2004.
Batman
so
Begins came out around then.
Yeah, Batman Begins came out, I think, in 2004 as well. So, yeah. Yeah, Spider-Man 3 is rough. Tobey Maguire. What's the other guy's name? Topher Grace is terrible as Venom. That's probably one of the worst. Like, all the villains in that movie are just super miscast. Thomas Hayden... Or what's that guy's name in Spider-Man 3? Thomas Hayden Church?
Pulling it up. The sand guy?
Yeah, Sandman. I feel like the villains they included were great, but none of them were given enough time. Thomas Hayden Church. Yeah, there we go. None of them were given enough time on screen. All of them, the romance fell off. Like, there's nothing in that movie that really works well.
And the emo dance stuff.
Gosh.
What the hell?
Don't even get me started on emo Spider-Man. That was... I think that's the worst...
That silence really just summed it up.
Yeah. Oh,
our silence of just like, ugh, remember?
I will say, so Spider-Man 2, as much as I was like iffy on it, Spider-Man 2 probably has like the... maybe different now with this movie. up until this movie, Spider-Man 2 may have my favorite sequence in any Spider-Man movie, which is the scene where he's on the train as it's running away. That yeah. whole sequence is amazing, especially the end where you... We'll get into this a little bit, where you literally see him stretch to his limits as he's holding on to save people. And I think one of the parts about that is that you not only see his love, his unconditional love for the people around him, but you also see almost their unconditional love for him as well. And that's such a key part of who Spider-Man is. So let's move on to the, I guess, Mark Webb, Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans, the Amazing sure. Spider-Man
yeah.
films, Jake. What's your opinion on these?
So, I mean, kind of like you said, just flip it. Like, Andrew Garfield is a horrible Peter Parker, like just total douchebag, and also like totally unbelievable. Like, first off, yeah. you're gorgeous, Andrew Garfield.
There's no you're way you're a nerd.
You're super cool. Like, you're a total douchebag. And but then, like, when you put him in the Spider-Man suit, he's exactly what you want. He's that witty,
yeah.
funny, like just jokester of a guy. He's also 30 years old and supposed to be playing a kid that just graduated high school. That's weird.
Yeah.
The first one's pretty good. I mean, I still don't know why they decided they had to reboot the origins, and especially in the way they did, they took a lot of liberties with the character.
Because they needed to retain the rights to the character. So
yeah,
pretty much
I mean,
what
I get
happens
it,
is
it's
every,
still...
what is it? There's so many years that if a studio doesn't make a movie with that character in those years, they lose the rights to those characters. So
I think it's
pretty much,
five.
Is it five? Yeah, that's what I thought. So pretty much if Sony doesn't make a Spider-Man movie every 5 years, they lose the rights to that and it goes back to Marvel, which for them as a studio is a big deal because, I mean, there's potentially billions of dollars in this character. So they're losing a $1 billion franchise easily if they just don't make a movie. So I think in their eyes, they're going, we'd rather make a movie and have it be terrible than lose the rights to this character.
Oh, for sure. And like the first one's fine. And in fact, some areas are yeah. pretty good. And those areas are Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. Like
yes.
their chemistry is phenomenal. And Andrew Garfield's a great Spider-Man, but I mean, the rest of the film is okay. And then Amazing Spider-Man 2 is one of the worst films ever. Oh my gosh, that movie is yeah. so, so bad. So
Jamie Foxx, as much as we praised him last week, that's probably his worst performance ever.
Just every decision on the character, like, and also just the music, literally every artistic decision of
yes.
that film was a bad decision. It was yep. so bad.
And even like on a, I don't know how to phrase this. Like there's scenes. So there's a scene in Spider-Man 2 where Electro and Peter Parker, Spider-Man, are facing off against each other in Times Square. And instead of people running, like you would do if something crazy was going on, everybody just stands there and watches as the battle is going. Like there's just terrible character decisions. Like you have Martin Soskas as a scientist with like lipstick who, like, oh, that's just, there's so many. You have BJ Novak in there for seemingly no reason whatsoever. You have Dane
I forgot
Feehan
he was
playing,
in that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You have Dane DeHaan playing, I don't
Hobgoblin.
Even know how to describe. Yeah.
Hobgoblin.
But like the worst Hobgoblin we've ever seen.
Yeah, it was bad.
Possible? Oh, it's so bad. These movies just have so many unnecessary subplots in them. Like the whole Peter Parker's parents thing and their involvement with
yeah, what the heck
Oscorp.
Is that? Oh
like
my
nobody,
gosh!
Like nobody, I don't, I've never as a Spider-Man fan once thought, man, I really wonder what happened to Peter's parents. Like. It's so much more interesting if we don't have that in there.
What's weird, yeah, though, is like Spider-Man Homecoming has all of the same setups in terms of
yes.
like, this would be interesting, or what if we had this character, whatever. But they do it right. Like the way
yes.
Sony made every wrong decision.
Yep. Oh, 100% agree. I think part of that was, I don't know if Mark Webb was the first, not the first, He was definitely early on in a series of this, but this was back when studios, I guess they still do this, but they made a wrong choice, was studios oftentimes will find a indie director and bring them up to a big budget film for a number of reasons, ranging from they want that person's artistic fresh view on things to they're an early person in the industry who they feel like they don't have any clout. And so they're going to be able to push them around. The studio is going to be able to get their will instead of the directors. So Mark Webb had done 500 Days of Summer, which is a great film, but by no means should have been the way to, should have been the deciding factor in getting these movies. Yeah. I think that's misstep one. I think the main thing this these movies do right is, Jake, what you said is Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone are both just perfectly cast. Like, well, not perfect. Garfield's great in some ways and not in others, but Emma Stone is just perfect in these movies. And their chemistry is...
Well, she's just perfect in, like, general. I mean, she's just perfect.
She's a great actress. I think that I'll be interested to see... She has... What's that film? Battle of the Sexes with Steve Carell coming out later this year.
Yeah.
Which looks really good. Probably get another Oscar nomination for that. Maybe she's the new Meryl Streep. But, you know. Yeah, so... I will say, I have a pretty fun theater memory of Amazing Spider-Man 2. Jake, do you remember seeing this movie together?
Oh, I will never forget it.
Do you want to tell a story or should I?
Yeah, I'll do a quick story time.
Okay.
So this includes spoilers for Amazing Spider-Man 2, if you
spoiler,
care.
Spoiler, spoilers.
Let me spoiler the spoiler. It's not worth it, so let me just tell you the story. So there was a group of us in, I believe it was in college, we went to go see this.
Yes.
And at the end climax of the film, Emma Stone, Gwen Stacy, falls down a large clock tower, and Andrew Garfield / Spider-Man shoots his web, tries to grab her. Web comes out in slow motion, looks like a hand. Ooh, artistic imagery. grabs Emma Stone. And, I mean, credit to the filmmakers. Her head hits the concrete so hard. it was a shocking sound. Oh, my God. It was, when it happened, I was like, oh, she's dead. And her head hits concrete, silence in the theater. And Cameron was so surprised that he dropped his bag of popcorn that at which this point was just kernels. And we were on like the top row. And so for the next 2 minutes, you just hear clink, ping, 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 as Andrew Garfield is crying on screen. And oh, it was the best way to end the worst movie experience.
I'd like to say I did it on purpose to add some comedic timing to the movie, but I was honestly shocked that they went for that. And as much as I dislike the movie as a whole, that's a pretty gutsy move to make in a big budget studio film like this, is to kill off arguably the only thing you have going for you in the movie. And
well, also it's like these are kind of kids movies, and she hit the concrete so hard.
It's pretty, like, it's not like graphic, like she hits the concrete and there's blood splatters everywhere, but it's like
just the sound.
There's a distinct sound and like image, like I can picture that shot in my head, and
it was strong.
Yeah, and it's well done for the most part. This movie was on cable, I want to say like 2 weeks ago or something, and I watched the end of it. I think I watched like the last 20 minutes. Just because this movie was coming up, and so I wanted to refresh. And it still plays well at the end of that movie, that whole, from the scene, like, well, the whole goblin fight scene at the end is just so thrown in there and terrible. But the emotional impact of that scene still holds pretty strong.
Yeah.
And I think that's credit to Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone's chemistry on screen.
What sucks is, like, it's not... It's a bad movie that unfortunately probably doesn't have a good movie in it because of how much the studio shoved in there. Like, there's just no emotion, no character development, except for that one scene. Like, that's a really good scene. But, dude, that story, I will never forget that story. It is so funny.
Well, I'm glad that I could bring comedic I guess, sense to an otherwise terrible and unfunny movie. But yeah, so then this movie comes out, and a couple years later, they announce that Marvel will be getting the rights, or not the rights, but Marvel will be bringing Spider-Man into the fold with the rest of their Avengers characters. And I was initially very skeptical of this because Sony was still going to have the rights, and I think there's a lot of confusing parts at first, and I was really frustrated because I so wish that I could have seen Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man in the hands of somebody who seemed to care more about the character. But that leads us to Tom Holland being in Civil War. Jake, you've seen Civil War, right?
Yeah, I actually just rewatched it like 2 days ago on Netflix.
Nice.
Great movie. Like, I forgot how good that movie was. But I realized, like, oh, he's in that, and I'm working on mindless stuff. So, yeah, let's put this on in the background. And and Tom Holland, like, in Civil War, it's a very, like, shoved-in scene and sequence because they just got the rights, and they were like, we have to set up Spider-Man. But the way they do it is, like, as well as you possibly could have done it. And Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. are incredible. Like, it really just is like a perfect appetizer of what's to come. And we'll talk more about it, obviously, because we have a whole Spider-Man review coming up. But, like, Tom Holland is amazing. Like, he is the greatest of all time. He's the GOAT. He's GOAT man. He's the GOAT Spider-Man.
No, he's Spider-Man, man. Come on.
Yeah, sorry. But, like, Civil War, great movie, and he is great in it.
Yeah. I think the thing that I was always so, and is still into this day, shocked with Civil War is that they fit so many characters in there. They introduce Spider-Man and Black Panther, and yet it still feels like a personal Captain America movie.
Yeah.
That movie, there's no reason that movie should work. And yet, it fires on every single cylinder and delivers a fun, entertaining story with so many memorable moments. And arguably the best fight scene in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, the airport fight scene. So, and Tom Holland's is a great part in that movie. I was a big fan. I was curious to see how it translated into a full movie, because in that movie he worked very well as a side character. But I was curious to see how it would be handled as a main role with two studios both having interest in the movie. Because in Civil War, it's a Marvel film that they kind of just brought Spidey into, but Spider-Man Homecoming is a Sony Pictures production that happens to also be somewhat produced by Marvel. So I was curious to see how it would blend. And I was a little bit skeptical of Tom Holland. I will say that, but I think, Jake, I'm going to guess that you feel this way, that Tobey Maguire was the best Peter Parker, or was a great Peter Parker. Andrew Garfield was a great Spider-Man, but Tom Holland is the best Peter Parker Spider-Man that we've seen on screen to date.
100% agree.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I can't say enough positive things about the kid, and so let's just go ahead and let's get our general thoughts out of the way. Jake, how did you feel about this movie?
So yeah, I mean, just to start off, this is the best portrayal of the character yet, because I think it's the most accurate. Like, yes, they take some liberties with, I guess, to nerd out for a second, the quote, the canon of Spider-Man, bleh.
Yeah.
But, like, get over it.
Well,
it's a great,
in what
it's
ways?
Great. Well, I mean, just, like, it's this, like, tech high school, and, like, he's getting his suit from Iron Man instead of making it himself, and, you know, just, like, a lot of the things that don't really make Spider-Man who Spider-Man is, but are just, like, details of the character. And so I'm willing to overlook that because it's a great film. The best part about this movie is it's a high school coming of age story that just happens to have Spider-Man in it. It's not the other way around. And that's why this film is so successful. And everyone in the cast is phenomenal. This movie should not be this good. There are 6 screenwriters and a director who hasn't really done anything, and somehow they made this movie. So I really recommend this movie. This is probably the most fun I've had at the theater besides Baby Driver in a long, long time. I'm just like really high on this movie.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. And John Watts, the director, had really only done one big film before this, and it was called Cop Car. And it played really well at Sundance. It's a pretty good thriller. Kevin Bacon in it. It was once again that whole like indie director comes to direct big budget film. But Marvel's done so well with that between the Russo brothers and James Gunn and so many other people that I wasn't, you know, I have trust in them that they're going to make the right film. But yeah, this film, I feel pretty confident in saying this is my favorite movie of the year so far.
Wow.
And I like Jake said, it is a Peter Parker film, and it has Spider-Man, and it's just, it blends the two perfectly. It has all the tropes of a normal high school movie. Tom Holland is just mind-blowingly good as Peter Parker. He embodies everything that I've ever wanted in an on-screen Spider-Man and Peter Parker. He feels young because, I mean, he is young, but he feels even younger because of the universe that he's set in, which I think is why having him in Civil War makes this movie even better, because it puts him in perspective of the rest of the universe.
Yeah.
And he's nerdy, but he has that like certain swagger to him when he puts that suit on. It's like, the only way I can describe it is like, so when I was a wedding photographer, for those of you guys who know me, I'm a pretty introverted person, I guess is the right word, when it comes to social situations. But if I have a camera in my hand, I get pretty confident. And that's the only way I can describe this is like, when he has that suit in his hand, he knows that he's the man and that he knows that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. Which I will say is funny that they kind of took the photography side of him and like, okay, what's a modern photographer? Okay, he's a vlogger. Like that was kind of, I don't know if he's like a YouTube Casey Neistat, Ben Brown vlogger, but he's, but like the opening of this movie with him in it, once we get past the Adrian Toomes introduction, is him vlogging what happens in Civil War.
I love that.
That's such a good scene. Like that scene is just so high school kid nowadays. Like, the only thing more high school would be if it was like an Instagram story instead of a vlog.
It was just like immediately like, here's the tone for this film and who this character is. And I was just like, yes, yes, yes.
Exactly.
Yes. It was a fun little like B-side of Civil War. Like,
yeah,
just the other side of it. It was fun.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing, without talking too much, the thing that this movie does so well, and it's what the best Spider-Man stories do, is that it's not necessarily a Spider-Man versus an enemy story as much as it is a Spider-Man versus Peter Parker or Spider-Man versus his own abilities story. It's the best Spider-Man stories are always the inner struggle stories. And I think that's one of the parts I love most about Spider-Man 2 is Spider-Man 2 is such an inner struggle. And in this movie, you see him stretched. And I mean, it's said on screen. I mean, Tony Stark actually says it, you know, if you're nothing with this suit, or if you're
nothing without the suit, you don't deserve it.
Exactly. And that's a perfect thing because Spider-Man is always so much like his suit is such a small part of who he is. And so I love how they set that up and then paid that off with, you know, to get into spoilers, if you haven't seen the movie, please go see the movie. Go see it. It's fantastic. You're going to love it. But the climax of the movie, he's not wearing his like big, great, amazing Tony Stark designed suit. He's wearing his personal home suit that he's made. And it's him. Like that's what Spider-Man is he's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's this small town, not small town because he lives in New York, but he's the like neighborhood guy. He's not the save Bruce Springsteen. Type of
he's the Bruce Springsteen of superheroes.
Exactly. Exactly. And this movie does it so well. Like, it stretches him out. It makes him really push himself. And I think that we see that literally and metaphorically on screen. And that's why this movie succeeds where other Spider-Man movies have failed.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And like, when I left the film, I was like, finally, there isn't a giant blue beam shooting in the sky or like a sky ship falling out of the falling out of the air in a Marvel / Spider-Man movie. We've said this so many times this summer, but small stakes are always a better way to go. It's more intimate. Mm-hmm. It allows us to grow to love the characters as we grow with them. It's more about like trying to make it through high school than saving the end of the world. Like, Peter spends most of the film screwing up. He's trying to be the hero because of his powers instead of because he has the moral or intellectual maturity and judgment to do so, like Captain or Tony Stark. And that's the best part, is you get to watch this kid grow up, and he's a great kid and you root for him. He just happens to be Spider-Man. It's so fun. Like, and another thing is, this cast is incredible.
Oh my gosh.
It's so overstuffed, but it totally works. Like, it's so hard to get an audience to care about this many characters. Granted, I mean, they've had like 15 movies with some of these characters. But everyone is great. Tom Holland is amazing. Keaton is a great antagonist because he's not really a hardcore villain. I mean, that's what makes him so great.
But okay, so let's sit on Keaton for a sec, because I want to hit on this.
Okay.
I think, and you can disagree, I think Keaton, outside of Loki, who's had 3 films, because he was in Thor, Avengers, and Thor 2, and he'll be in the new Thor, but he's had 3 films. I feel like outside of Loki, Michael Keaton is the best villain we've seen in the MCU, and he even, in some ways, for me, rivals Loki.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, because no one else is coming to mind, because Marvel doesn't have great villains. I mean, that's something they've really struggled with, but with Keaton and this character, Tombs, I mean, slash Vulture, they totally nailed it, because his motivation totally makes sense, and it's Keaton, so like, it's incredible.
Keaton's absolutely terrifying in this role. Like, he... We'll get into this a little bit later, but there are several scenes where I was the tension, like, in the actual theater. Like, I was gripping my seat because it was so, and I, this is part credit to Tom Holland, part credit to Keaton in the scenes that they share, but it was so exactly what you picture in that situation of the actual tension. We felt that in the theater, at least for me. Like, I was sitting there. I think, Jake, you know what scene I'm talking about, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. But gosh, I was like terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about what you're talking about. So wait for spoilers if you're interested, but just to run down the rest of the cast real quick. I mean, Robert Downey Jr.
He's such a small part in the movie. Like, he really does have such a small complimentary part.
Yeah, he's small, but I mean, it's Robert Downey Jr., so you're going to get amazingness every single time. Marissa Tomei as Aunt May I loved her. Like, I thought she was a great choice. Yeah, she was great, and I loved that role to make her younger, because it totally makes sense. Like, why would Aunt May be 88 years old? That doesn't make sense.
When he's 15. And also, once again, without getting into spoilers, I don't know about your theater. Without, like, the end of the movie, my theater erupted.
Oh,
like, one of the loudest laughs I've ever heard in a theater.
Loved it. Yeah, it was
loved
great.
Loved it. Okay, keep going.
One last character, Jacob Batalon as Ned.
Yes,
dude, he stole the show.
The guy in the guy in the seat.
Guy in the chair. Guy in the chair.
And he actually, like, I love that at the end when he actually is getting to be the guy in the chair, there's rows of computers, and he's rolling back and forth between two as if he was, like, in a high-tech situation.
Yeah, he was so good. He stole the show. I mean, like, him and Tom Holland's interaction were incredible.
I believed they were best friends.
Yeah, it was great. The cast, this is probably the best cast besides the Avengers themselves that Marvel has put together.
So a couple other cast people I want to get through. Donald Glover, who is a huge Spider-Man fan.
Yeah.
And should have been Miles Morales if they ever did one.
He was too old. That's okay. So that's what I love about Tom Holland is he looks like he's 15, maybe 16.
Yes.
Donald Glover is like 34.
Yeah.
And so when they were considering him as Miles Morales, he was like 28. I'm so glad, I love Donald Glover. He is one of my favorite actors, writers, comedians, and rappers. He's an incredible rapper as Childish Gambino and musician. His new album's incredible, but I'm so glad they didn't cast him as Miles Morales.
Yeah. But interesting note, he says, I got a nephew who lives in this neighborhood. Do you know who his character's nephew is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Miles Morales.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
That was cool. Zendaya from the Disney Channel as Michelle was pretty funny. All of the decathlon teammates of his were hysterical, and their interactions were so well placed and so, like, everything about this felt so high school to me. Like, it really felt like they knew high school. Like, even to the fact, like, down to the details where Ned has the dog from the It's Fine in the Burning Building memes on the back of his laptop. Like, it's so,
so good.
High school, and that's perfect. Zendaya was great. Tony Revolori as Flash, and I mean, he's a modern bully. He's not the physical beat you up bully. He's the mental, emotional, I'm gonna bully you on a social level type of bully. And that was such a modern, like, great modern addition to a normally stereotypical 90s bully. He was great in that movie. Big fan of him. John Favreau as Happy Hogan was a very, very good little placement. And the one problem I have with the casting in the movie is Laura Harrier as Liz Allen, who is the
love interest.
Love interest. Yeah, thank you. For Peter Parker. How did you feel about her in this movie?
She was fine. I mean, I guess she, like, kind of embodies the typical high school crush, like, pretty smart leader stuff. And so I get that. But, like, her character was pretty hollow. And I think that's probably intentional.
Intentional? Okay, so why would that be intentional?
All right, well, we'll go ahead and get into spoilers now because I think we've covered our general thoughts.
Okay, hold on. Because I know where you're going to go, and I want to save that.
Okay.
Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, spoilers. Spoilers, here we are.
Spoilers.
So this is spoilers. If you have not seen this movie, go see it. It is a great film. But
it's playing every 30 minutes at the local theater near you. Just go see
it. Seriously, just go find it. I think the reason Liz is kind of hollow and she just kind of like fills the spot of the high school crush, which she does well, is because she's gone at the end of the film. And then Zendaya's character, I'm assuming, is Mary Jane, essentially.
She's
MJ.
Not. They have said that she's not meant to be Mary Jane.
Well, then why even call her MJ?
I'm 100% with you. I don't fully get that. Okay. And I will say, there are a couple of things that worry me. I'm not like 100% on this movie. I'm like 96, 97%. And that's one of the things that I was like, that. It feels like the end of The Dark Knight Rises when they're like, oh, I like that middle name of yours. You should use it more often. Robin. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt just like smirks. It felt like that to me.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But like, I think we're probably not going to see Liz again, I'm assuming. And I think that was the intentional, like, let's just make her your stereotypical high school crush. Like, pretty, smart, nice, done.
Yeah. I don't know. She just didn't work for me. Like, I didn't buy her as an actress. And yeah, she was hollow and I just didn't feel like she was representative of a modern high school female.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I think that's my problem, is that I didn't feel like there was a well-placed love. I feel like if she was a more interesting, better written love interest for Peter, it would have just added that much more to the theater. I don't think that her being not as hollow takes anything away from the rest of the movie.
Yeah, but I think the thing is, like, he's a sophomore in high school in this film, and so I think that's just part of the character, is it's like,
yeah,
when you're in high school, your crush is like, oh my God, she's amazing, and then like you look back on it and you're like, oh, she sucked, or like, oh, she was fine. And so I think that's kind of what it is. Like, in his mind, it's like, oh my God, it's Liz. But to us, yeah, we're like, dude, it's just Liz. Like, chill out.
Yeah, but I guess that does make sense. Like, in high school, like, there's always that, like, I don't know how to, well, like, you fantasize or romanticize everything in your head 10 times more. And, like, any girl you have a crush on is like, oh my gosh, she's the one, she's amazing. And then, like,
yeah,
you get, like, a day down the road and you're like, never mind, I have a new crush. Like, that's just high school.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think you're onto something there. I think that works in that sense, in that it's a fleeting romantic thing. Do you want to get to the big twist, or do you want to talk about a couple action pieces? Okay, so let's get to the big twist.
Twist.
How much was your jaw, like, how close to the ground was your jaw when it was revealed that Michael Keaton's Tombs is the love interest Liz's dad?
Dude, totally got me. Like, when he opened the door, in my mind, I was like, holy crap, he knows, he's got Liz. And then he, like, was chill and was talking to Peter, like, normally. And then Liz, and I was just like, wow, that got me. So I did not see that coming. And usually I'm able to call that stuff. But
yeah,
man, that got me so good. And I loved it. It made
it
so much sense.
So well. Yeah, and like my wife and I in the theater, like, turned to each other, like, mouth open, just like, what the heck? And they play it so well. And even, like, going into this, I knew from the comics and from the TV show that the main reason for Vulture's actions most of the time is because he has, like, a sick daughter or something that he's trying to help. And so I even remember thinking, like, oh, he's probably got a family at home. And never even crossed my mind, oh, I wonder who his family is. Because they mention his family multiple times. But, man, what a twist. And that scene with Tom Holland in his house just, like, terrified. Like, that plays so well on the, like, first time meeting your date's dad.
Dude, and, like, Keaton's speech to Tom in the car, holy crap.
Oh, so oh my good. Gosh. That's what I'm talking about. Like, this movie knew exactly the tone in every single scene and hit it. Like, in that scene, there's no comedy because there doesn't need to be. And it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, I was terrified in that scene. I remember for Tom Holland, I was terrified because it felt like, okay, so in our heads, I think we know as an audience, nothing, like, he's not going to kill Spider-Man. But at the same time, you're like, what's the worst that he could do besides that? Like, oh, that scene was so well played out.
Yeah, the twist totally got me, and it totally works. Like, it doesn't feel forced in at all. Like, this could have felt so just, like, shoved into the plot, and it works for every single character involved, and it pushes every single character forward. Like, that's where Spider-Man becomes Spider-Man, or is the catalyst to him becoming Spider-Man, and it pushes Tombs, like, over the edge to the next level. It just totally works and progresses the story, progresses the characters, and really, really works for the audience.
Yeah. And I think it also gives Tombs even more, it makes sense of his actions even more. Like, you come to understand, like, oh, this is a character that we somewhat care about. And he's just doing it for that character. Like, he's trying to provide a better life for them, which I think is something that anybody can relate to. Is like, you want to provide the best life possible for those around you. And
he's not evil.
No, he operates in a completely gray space, which is why he works so well.
Yeah.
He's not this like just pure evil thing. He's a person who you can understand.
Yeah. And his suit is amazing. That vulture yes. suit was awesome.
With the bomber jacket?
Yeah. I really dug the opening scene with Toombs because, like, I never really thought about that after the New York massacre or whatever they end up calling it. Like, there's just alien technology everywhere. And, like, what happens with that alien technology? Oh, vulture. That's what happens. And, like, criminal weapons. And,
yeah.
What a interesting and, like, good development of the world.
But I think, so yeah, Jake, you hit on it really well there in that it takes these large scale scenarios that we know so well from these movies and brings them into a small scale. And I think because we've gotten blue beams into outer space and the world ending, that the scene at the end of the movie where Spider-Man is literally with webs steering a plane to avoid buildings, that's bigger than anything we've seen in any other Spider-Man movie. Yet it feels smaller because of the world that we're in. So I think that's a perfect case where Spider-Man being in the MCU greatly benefits this character on a storytelling level.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I think this movie works so well because of that personal connection. A couple other things to talk about. The scene on the Washington Monument. Did you get like that sweaty palm feeling whenever he like looks over the edge as he's at the top?
I'm not terrified of heights. Like I'm definitely I'm cautious of heights, but I'm not like terrified. But that whole scene was great. Like how he's just talking to himself, like I'm Spider-Man. Come on, let's go. Like that was great. And the action and seeing him scale up the Washington Monument, that was cool. That was probably like the writers being like, what's the biggest, tallest, most difficult to climb monument in our country? Washington Monument. Yeah. Got it.
But the funny thing is the Washington Monument is literally in the middle of fields. And this movie handles the idea of Spider-Man without large buildings so well.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many scenes where it's like he's without buildings and he literally has to like run across a golf course to get to this scene. And instead of just like showing like him quickly running, it like does this wide shot and has him run from the right side of the screen to the left side. And it's just that you scale so well in this movie. It amazed me.
Comedy lives in the wide shot and they use it really well. It's so funny.
That they do. Okay. So I'll get through a couple of other things. The boat scene to me was a misstep for the, not the boat scene as a whole, but in us believing that if this boat somehow splits apart that everybody on the boat's going to die. Because at least in my head, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, in my head, if that boat splits apart, everybody just floats to the top. And as we see, there's tons of boats around it anyways, ready to save them. And
yeah.
So I wasn't...
With something like that, there's the, like, I forget what it's called, but it's like the undertow.
Is it like the Titanic thing where it like pulls you down?
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, it's not the biggest boat, but that definitely would be a factor. But I was disappointed in the way that they sold that in the trailer. Because this film, this is something we can talk about at the end, is like there was so much given away about this film in the marketing. And
so that's another thing I wanted to talk about was the marketing, because we were very critical of the marketing leading up to this.
And they marketed this as like the climactic moment in the film in a way.
Yeah.
And then to have it kind of be like a failure point, Iron Man shows up. I mean, it was like a good twist, not twist, but like it was a good development point for the character because he loses the suit and it's like a moment with Robert Downey Jr. and all this stuff. And that was great. But I don't know. Yeah, I think the boat moment could have been stronger.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into marketing a little bit, because I was very critical of the marketing of this movie leading up to actually seeing this. And I think the movie is lucky that the chemistry on screen and our entertainment on screen is so there, because some of the biggest like my favorite parts of the movie, I was so into because of the movie building up to that, that I didn't think about it this way until after. But the, so like one of the big scenes was like earlier in the movie, they set up that there's a way for Tony to operate his suit when he's not in there. And that's very well done, very well played. But then at the boat scene, he's actually in his suit. And we don't know that until Tom Holland has kind of given it to this Iron Man suit and been like, if you actually cared about this, you'd actually be here. And then Tony Stark actually steps out of the suit. That shot's in the trailer. Imagine if that shot wasn't in the trailer. I would have fully assumed that Tony Stark wasn't in there. And that scene would have played almost as well as the Adrian Toomes, Liz's dad scene in my head.
Yeah, I agree. I strongly agree with your point of the chemistry and the pacing of this film is so good that you lose yourself in it, because I kind of like, even though a lot of the scenes were in the marketing, that didn't bug me at all. Like,
no.
Just because I was so immersed in the film. And I'm assuming what happened was they saw a screener like 3 months ago and they were like, we got something special on our hands. We need to ramp up the marketing and get people to the theater. Yeah. That's what I'm guessing what happened. I don't know. It's Sony. I mean, they market the crap out of everything.
No, yeah, completely. And I think you're onto something there in that the scenes work and those shots work because of the buildup to those scenes get us wrapped up in there. And that's credit to the pacing and editing of the film. I think there's three more things I really want to talk.
So kind of one scene that I just really want to like mention, absolutely loved, was the Peter Parker, Spider-Man trapped in the building. And
yes.
He's freaking out and then like yelling at himself, like, come on, Peter. And then he switches to like, come on, Spider-Man. I was like, come on, Spider-Man, you can do it. Oh, man.
Oh, your heart breaks for him at that scene. And that's actually a callback, I think, to like Spider-Man number 4 or 3 or something. Like, that's a scene in one of the original Spider-Man.
Whatever comics. It was, Tom Holland's performance in that. That was the moment where I was like, this kid is a great actor. Like,
yeah,
the range that he has in this film is really impressive.
And I think that scene especially makes you realize how emotionally invested you are in that character.
Yeah.
Because when that scene comes around, like, you're legitimately like pained. Like, you can feel that pain in his voice when he's like, somebody help me. And like, you, oh, it just sits with you.
And it's because, and it's also because Tom Holland looks and acts like a kid. Like, his reaction in that moment is the reaction that a 15-year-old would have in that scene. And he sounds like a 15-year-old, unlike Andrew Garfield. And so he's like yelling, and you're like, holy crap, somebody help this kid. And then he just like turns into Spider-Man, and you're just like, oh my gosh, yes.
You're so hyped in that moment. You're like, yeah, let's go jump off buildings and do whatever we need to.
Yeah.
Okay, couple of things. The end scene where Peter Parker chooses to stay home instead of joining the Avengers was a nice, very nice little scene. I also like that they brought Pepper Potts back for that scene and kind of gave you that like, oh, Pepper and Tony are back together. Good.
Are they like engaged now?
I think they made like a joke about it that like Tony was going to be. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we get to the Avengers and they're engaged or married. I think it was kind of like leading up to that like idea to where when we get to those next. I have a whole theory about that, and that it would be spoilers for the Avengers, the Infinity War. But this is no way true or anything. This is just my thought, is that. So in Civil War, we kind of learned that they're broken up, right? Like Pepper's left him or something. So here's my thought, is that they put that in there so that in Infinity War, if they kill Pepper, Tony loses it and will go. That will drive him to go to space to fight Thanos.
That makes sense.
I was trying to think about it. I'm like, why put her in there outside of something like that to give us that detail that we need going forward?
Yeah. Well, it was nice for Gwyneth Paltrow to take a break out of her schedule from gooping to be able to, you know, come back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Oh, she's an interesting character in real life.
Dude, she's crazy. But
yeah,
the Iron Spider costume, holy cow.
Yeah.
Dude, that thing was so cool looking.
Man, I hope we get to see him in that in Infinity War.
Yeah, that was legit.
And then, so this is a, probably a minor frustration, but it feels like a bigger deal to me. And I you can tell me that I'm being neurotic, and I probably am. So Avengers happens in 2012. And we're to believe that the cleanup at the beginning of the movie probably takes place like a month after that, right? And then it jumps to 8 years later. 8 years later is 2020. But then this movie takes place right after Civil War, which happens in 2016, which is 4 years later.
Yeah, and I don't know. I never noticed that. I don't follow those things that closely. You might be right. Who knows?
So I'm just being neurotic. Is yeah. really what it comes down to.
We'll sum it up to that.
Okay. Well, I think that's fair. It just seems like such a... Because it's like if it was a small detail and they're like, oh, crap, should we reshoot that? Oh, don't worry about it. But it's literally just text on screen. And so I'm trying to figure out, like, Marvel doesn't make mistakes like that. And so that has to be cluing us into either the timeline that, as we think of it, is different. And Avengers took place in 2009 and this takes place in 2017, or this, I'm not gonna even think about it, whatever, something's fishy there. And that's just, it just bothered me. It, like,
you're going full nerd, Cameron, and you never
I'm
go
going full
nerd,
nerd.
Never
don't
go
ever,
full nerd
you never go full nerd everybody
never go
that.
Full nerd
which is a Robert Downey Jr. line as well. There we go. We're coming full circle here.
Boom.
Okay.
Dude, whoever came up with those Captain America PSA video ideas deserves a raise.
Yes. Oh,
those
my goodness. And that's exactly
so funny.
The end of the credits cap scene where he's patience is a virtue that you should be proud of. And he just stands there and looks around. And that's such just golden, like, hey, you guys want a post-credit scene? Let's give you one.
Yeah. That
and
was
so fun.
That was great. And those, like, just interspersed throughout the film were so funny. And one other little bit that I loved was the shocker bit, like with the character, where he just like kills the other guy accidentally, and then this new guy becomes the shocker and is just kind of the shock. Like, if you're gonna introduce if you're gonna introduce upcoming villains or more villains in a film, that's how you do it, Sony.
Yeah.
Take notes. It's simple.
Uh-huh. And especially like even in the second post credit scene where it's Scorpion that they kind of introduce.
Yeah.
That was well done as well and didn't feel... I think that was a nice little toss out for people who are like, well, where's the Sinister Six? I think that's a nice little placement for that if they decide to go that route. I don't think Scorpion's the most interesting of Spider-Man villains when you look at his pantheon of villains that he has. But then again, I felt the same way about the Vulture going into this movie, and they changed my mind on that. Not to mention the fact that there's the Captain America scene where they're like, who cares that Captain America is a war criminal now?
Yeah.
That's such a nice little like MCU placement. Like that makes me happy that Spider-Man's a part of this universe and not just off on his own.
This film felt more like MCU-y than a lot of the other Marvel films felt. I don't know if it was just me, but like all of it just felt like we... How can I say this? So, okay, so this takes place...
like an episode of TV.
Yeah, it takes place in Queens, you know, and we're, like, in the Queens neighborhood with Peter Parker and Spider-Man, and it's, like, we're living in the MCU. It's as if we are citizens of Queens in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and all of these things are around us and present and just, like, everyday life. And when you watch a film like Captain America or Iron Man or The Avengers, you don't really get that feeling because it's just from the perspective of Captain America or Iron Man or the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Whereas this felt like we were living in the MCU and all of those characters were everywhere and such a big influence.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. And I think part of that is that this feels a lot like the very first Iron Man movie to me.
Yeah. Agreed.
And which is a great thing because that's my favorite MCU film. But I think this movie, if you break it down, has a lot of similarities with that movie. And I think it also helps that Iron Man himself, Robert Downey Jr., is actually in this movie shepherding that. When Doctor Strange came out, I think everybody looked at him as the new Tony Stark. So the general idea is that after Avengers 3 and 4, the old regime of Cap, Tony Stark, Thor will kind of go away because their contracts are done. And it will lead way to the new Avengers. And I think everybody viewed Doctor Strange as the new Tony Stark. And while I like Doctor Strange and Benedict Cumberbatch is fine, Tom Holland feels much more like the new Tony Stark Iron Man than anything else we've seen yet.
Yeah, I can see that. Cumberbatch kind of looks like Downey, though, so I also see that.
He has the same goatee.
Yeah.
And that's about it. So let's go ahead and let's talk about where this ranks in the filmography of Marvel films. Jake, where is this, if you're ranking the movies, and we don't need to hear all the rankings, but like, where does this sit for you? What movies are around it in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I mean, I've only seen it once, and you know, you usually need another viewing to properly rank a film, but I would confidently put this in top five, probably.
Yeah.
I think it's right around Iron Man 1, which is like number 3 on my list, and Captain America 3 Civil War / Avengers 1. I mean, this is strong. My two favorite Marvel films are Captain America 2 Winter Soldier and Guardians of the Galaxy 1. And I think Iron Man's probably next, and I could probably put Spider-Man right after that. This is a great movie. It's a lot of fun. Stands alone, but like in the total MCU, I mean, it is definitely one of the best. Better than Thor 2. I can confidently say it's better than Thor 2.
Thor, the cars of the Avengers universe. although I will say Ragnarok looks pretty great. I think part of that is the director that they have, Taika Waititi.
Agreed.
So I'm with Jake. I think, especially with Marvel movies, and I found this to be true a lot of times in watching their movies on repeat viewings, but Marvel movies either get better the more you watch them, or they start to fade away and be less memorable. And I'm looking at you, Thor 1 and 2, and Incredible Hulk, and Doctor Strange. But this is definitely a top five for me. I think number one's Iron Man. But I think from there, Guardians 1, Avengers, this movie, and all three of the Captain America movies are all, depending on the day, somewhat arranged in there. I think there's a lot of really good, really, really good moments in this movie that I'm hoping upon repeat viewing may even make this movie number 2 on my list. The only other thing I can compare this to, and this is what I kept thinking, was the last time that like I had this fun at a Marvel movie on the first viewing was Guardians of the Galaxy. And before that, it was Iron Man. And those three movies all were just such complete shocks to me that I had such a blast in the theater. And I think that's, you know, putting this film with those two just goes to show how much Marvel hit it out of the park with this movie. And that's, you know, job well done to them. They really nailed this character and gave us exactly what we wanted.
Yeah.
So, Jake, do you have anything else that you want to mention on this film before we get to our ratings?
I mean, the only other thing I would say is this soundtrack and score are one of the best in a Marvel film. Specifically, the score I felt was better than usual. And the soundtrack and like just the general vibe that Marvel has had, just like the style in the last few films, I've just really enjoyed it. With the classic music, like this film had a bunch of like punk and like the Shins and just like, I don't know. It just the feel that they have going with Ragnarok and the Guardians movies and
Black Panther.
Yeah, Black Panther looks incredible, and I feel like they're just really killing it, and they're just doing an awesome job building a world and everything that goes with that. And yeah, I just love the style of this movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Marvel's got a lot of exciting. I mean, so their next three films are Thor Ragnarok, which the trailer looks amazing for. Black Panther, which once again, the trailer looks amazing for and has one of my favorite actors in it, Andy Serkis, and one of my favorite up and coming directors, Ryan Coogler, who did Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Dude, that and movie then, looks amazing.
It's I'm more excited to see that than I am in Thor right now.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And I think part of that's Chadwick Boseman. I think part of it's that they have one of the best working actors in Hollywood today, Michael B. Jordan, in that movie, and Ryan Coogler, who's done no wrong in my eyes so far. It looks like it's complete own film, which I'm really excited about. But they have Thor Ragnarok in November, Black Panther in February, and then in May, they have the first, I guess it's not the first part because they renamed it, but they have Avengers Infinity War. Which Avengers 3 and 4 are meant to be the conclusion to this cinematic universe as we know it. And then right after Avengers 4 in 2019, we'll get Spider-Man 2, which will then kick off the new universe as we know it.
Doesn't Captain Marvel come out around then sometime?
Yeah. So the rest of their slate, Thor in November 2017, Black Panther, February 2018, Avengers Infinity War, May 2018. And then I'm trying to remember the order, but I think it goes Ant-Man and Wasp, July 2018, and then Captain Marvel in November.
That's a lot of superhero movies.
No, they go like February of 2019. Because they're doing three a year, and so yeah.
My gosh, that's so many. So
in between Avengers 3 and 4 is Ant-Man and Wasp, and then Captain Marvel with Brie Larson.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So by the time they're done, we're at 16 now. By the time they're done with Avengers 4, we'll be at 22.
Wow. Well, I mean, I'm excited for all of those. Like, strangely. Yeah. I'm excited for all of them, that speaks to Marvel.
Yeah. I'm so curious to see how they wrap this up, and especially considering what the Infinity Gauntlet is in the comics, I'm curious to see how ballsy they will get with this universe.
Yeah. I think everybody's going to die.
Not trying to give spoilers away. I legitimately would be disappointed if that didn't happen.
They have, like, that's the only complaint I have with the Marvel films is they're really good at creating stakes with these intimate stories like Spider-Man, Captain America, Iron Man. But when it comes to the Avengers, like, there never really feels to be any stakes because the action is so big. And so,
yeah.
Like, when a building falls, we don't see the people in that building dying.
Or
like,
a city.
Yeah, like we just see the destruction. We don't see people's faces as they die, you know. And so,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
These big films don't really feel like they have stakes, and especially with the heroes when they have contracts for three more films, you know. And we know that going in. And so, as weird as it sounds, like I hope they kill some heroes because like we need. I think we need to feel that emotion as the viewer, and that's what Marvel needs to do to really set up the future of the franchise and to make consequences real, you know, as this film talked about so often, and same with Civil War, there need to be consequences to the actions. And we're like, what, 20 movies in now and nobody's died? I mean, that's... Yeah.
Phil Coulson died.
Well, I mean,
I would be willing to bet that at the end of Avengers 3, one of our big three heroes dies, being Thor, Captain America, or Iron Man. I would be willing to bet that at the end of Avengers 3, one of them dies, setting up the stakes for Avengers 4.
Well, I swear, if the Avengers 3 ends on a coffin with dirt on it, and then the dirt trembles, I'm gonna be so mad.
Yeah. And then Superman comes out of that coffin into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, laying way for Star Wars to also make its bridge in, and Patton Oswalt getting his dream.
The Mandalorian gauntlet comes to the tip after a beat. So good.
Okay. Rating for this movie. Jake, what do you give this movie?
I'm going to give it an A-. It's definitely not perfect. But it's great. I think, like I said, it's the most MCU-y of all the MCU films in a way, which I think both benefits it and hurts it. But I mean, it's just a lot of fun. I'm super excited to see where Tom Holland goes. So I guess technically my A- is like a 93.9. So like it could, if the teacher was nice, they could bump it up to an A. So I'm going to give it a 93.9%. And the teacher, I'm just the teacher's assistant. The teacher will make the decision on the bumping of the grade.
I can say that when I taught in high school that I don't think we had A minuses. My students can text me if they want and tell me whether or not we had A minuses. I don't think we did. But I know that if you had a grade, that was like a 0.8, 0.9 that you had to round it up. So Jake's grade, technically teacher's rule, rounds up to an A.
Well, there you go. It's a 93.9, which means what you want it to mean.
Okay, I'll take that as an A. Thank you. I've already said this is my favorite movie I've seen this year so far, and I feel pretty confident in that. Now, that being said, I haven't seen a couple of good movies that came out earlier this year. Of the ones I've seen, though, this is my favorite movie, and it's an A for me. Like I said, movies very rarely get an A+ on first viewing, but this is the exact summer movie that I want to see, and I will pay to see every single week in and out, if this is what every movie ends up being. It's an A, or on Trevor's scale, it's 2 web shooters out of 2 web shooters.
Boom.
So getting Trevor in there for us. But yeah, that's all we have on Spider-Man Homecoming. Jake, what is your content of the week that our listeners should check out?
Okay, so I have 3, and I apologize. But so 2 are related, /3. I guess they're all kind of related to Spider-Man, so abstractly related. They're on the web of Spider-Man, if you will. Okay, so first one is a graphic novel called Marvels. Marvel with an S. And when I talked about how in this film we are like citizens of Queens, New York, being surrounded by the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's what this graphic novel is like. It's as if you are a civilian living in New York City and all this crazy stuff is happening around you. It's really interesting because I think it was just a really smart move by Marvel to like have that frame of mind of what would it be like to be a person living in this absurd world we've created. And it's just really well done. Second are related to Donald Glover. Both of my next recommendations. We just started watching Community. And I know that's a you and Trevor thing, and so I apologize that I'm making this recommendation instead of you guys.
But do it. Go for it.
The first 3 seasons of Community are hilarious. And Donald Glover, Donald Glover is amazing. I mean, he is just pop, pop. I mean, he is.
Yes, we can make that reference on here now.
Yes, he is so cool. Cool.
Okay, wait, do you know who Pop Pop is? Do you know who that actor is?
Mm-mm.
That's Jordan, what's his name? From Harry Potter, the guy who announces the Quidditch games.
Oh, yes, it is. Oh my gosh, my mind was just blown. Okay, yeah, Community.
Pop.
Community is amazing. First three seasons. We're in season four right now. Not as great, but first three seasons.
Season five brings it back good, though.
Yeah, okay. That's good to know. Season one through three, some of the best ever on TV. And then my final recommendation, I apologize. I know this is a lot, is Donald Glover's most recent album as his kind of like alter ego musician, Childish Gambino, Awaken My Love. It's super different than his first two albums, which I loved both of those as well. But this is as if he like went back in time and hung out with Marvin Gaye and then like came back. It's like funk. And it is just awesome. And he did a live performance of Redbone on Jimmy Fallon. And it is worth watching because first off, he is an incredible musician. But secondly, he is shirtless and wearing like glitter jeggings, and it's just, and he's got this like, he's got this nasty like 70s mustache, and it's just like, dude, you were legitimately time traveling and hanging out with Marvin Gaye. What the heck? This is amazing. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of Donald Glover. I love that he was in this movie. And so Marvel's Community and Awaken My Love by Childish Gambino, those are my recommends. Cameron, what about you?
Yeah, so I've come to the realization that content of the week can be as many or as few as we want it to be. So, listeners, always be ready for us to have more than one because there's just so much content out there that is recommendable.
Yeah.
And I have two this week, neither of which are very related to this movie, but they're just two things that I feel like people should check out. One being a documentary that came out last year called Life Animated. I don't know how to describe it. It's the most hopeful, and like, it's the reason I feel like if Walt Disney watched that movie, that would give him so much joy in knowing that he made those movies, and that they had that kind of impact on a person. The overall story is that there's a boy who at the age of three stops talking, and his parents kind of go to a doctor and find out that he's autistic and just doesn't talk for a while, and then slowly learns to communicate again pretty much through Disney characters and Disney movies. And it's his story. It's incredibly powerful, incredibly moving, and it's one of those movies that it's a movie about the power of movies. And I always try to put into words about how powerful movies are and how powerful what we consume is. And I think this movie is the perfect example that sometimes what you create is so much bigger than you or anything that you could have ever imagined it being. And I think as a huge Disney fanatic, I think it's amazing to see what these movies have done on more than an entertainment level. And I think that if you really dug into it, there are probably a couple more stories like this that you could find of how Disney movies have impacted people's lives. Jake, have you seen Life Animated?
Yeah, and it is so, so good. So well done. Just such a sensitive topic that they handled so well. And I mean, if you want to have like a happy cry, like this is the movie to watch. Man, it is just
good. Yeah, happy cry is the perfect way. And then the other one is a football series, so kind of flipping subjects here, on Amazon Prime called All or Nothing. And it's like, imagine if Hard Knocks followed a team for an entire season and not just the preseason. The first season they did was with the Arizona Cardinals, and it was amazing. And the second season just came out, and I've watched the first three or four episodes, and it's with the Los Angeles Rams, and goes through actually the firing of Jeff Fisher midway through the season.
Ooh, good, fire him.
I know. Jake, are you a Rams fan?
Well, I'm from St. Louis, and so I was in fifth grade when they won the Super Bowl, and they were the greatest show on turf, and then they were the worst team in NFL history for like 12 years. And so kind of stopped following them, but just like what that organization did to St. Louis and the lies that they spouted. There's a lot of hate in my heart that I need to let out about the St. Louis Rams. So yeah, continue.
So maybe this isn't the best series for you.
I think it'd be interesting. I love that stuff.
Yeah. The hard part is, unless you have an Amazon Prime account, you can't watch it. But if you have an Amazon Prime account, you can watch it. And it's fantastic. It's called All or Nothing. So, yeah, All or Nothing. Season 1's great. I'm halfway through season 2, and it's pretty entertaining. And then Life Animated, a documentary from 2016. Alrighty, Jake, it is the end of the episode.
Dude, this was a good one.
This is a good one. I like this. This is a fun movie. And next week, I think it's safe to say we're going to be reviewing War for the Planet of the Apes.
So excited.
We texted about this, but the fact that Planet of the Apes prequel series is one of the best blockbuster series right now is just mind-blowing. And that second movie.
A prequel trilogy. Like, prequel what the heck? And it is
at the same time,
so good.
I'm going to be so bummed if the last that we get of Andy Serkis as Caesar is this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I seriously think he could have been nominated for an Academy Award for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, that dude, I forgot I was watching a monkey. Like,
oh my gosh. And the effects in it, goodness. So, listeners out there, if you haven't seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes or Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, go see them. And then go see War for the Planet of the Apes coming out on July 14th. Because that movie, I'm going to guess, I haven't seen it, I'm going to guess it's going to be pretty good. Alrighty. Well, if you have enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes. Like us, subscribe, rate us, give us 5 stars, let us know your thoughts, and then recommend this to a friend. Please recommend, get this word out there on this podcast. But yeah, if you want more of our stuff, you can go to our website at popcornoptional.com. We're on Twitter at popcornoptional. You can find us on Facebook at popcornoptional as well. And then my name's Cameron Slanina. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at 321CamieTime. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find my website at jakebrown.tv, and that'll take you to all the social media, all my work, all that jazz.
Go check him out. He's an incredibly talented filmmaker. But we will see you next week as we talk War for the Planet of the Apes. So until next week, we will see you next week. Bye-bye, guys.
See ya.